pase, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Friday, March 8th, 2019. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Mullins. As always, a busy show for you today. We'll talk about the Rémi Garde and the rumors coming out of Montreal. We'll talk about the U.S. Women's National Team and the USSF in a lawsuit, battling in a lawsuit that was announced earlier today as well. We'll look at Week 2 in Major League Soccer, but Dwayne, let's start with Wednesday's action in the CONCACAF Champions League and in the Europa UEFA Champions League. Manchester United eliminated PSG, Dwayne. Can you believe that?
I can believe it. PSG, like, what's the story here? The story is twofold, and it depends, I guess, on your perspective on which one you want to highlight. I mean, if you're a United fan, you're talking about how, you know, they're all these got them going again. They got their old, you know, strut back finally. You know, they had to go back to one of the old boys, just like, you know, to get the Alex Ferguson sort of jive back. There's some people that are even suggesting that Alex Ferguson is kind of whispering in his old player's ear and maybe managing this team indirectly anyway, right? Now that's the narrative from that side, and if you're a United fan, which those that know me know that I am very much not, but if you are, then you love that, you lap that stuff up. I mean, and this, they're Manchester United, and I say this without malice. They are brilliant at creating those narratives and creating that branding and that sort of identity. They've done a very good job of that over the years, and then, you know, they sort of dropped off in the past little while on the pitch. But, you know, you look at the lineup that they put out there against PSG and you go, how the hell did PSG lose to that team? And there's the other side of the narrative. PSG, yeah. WTF.
PSG, what, $2 billion spent on players since, what, 2012? Not one Champions League semifinal. Yeah, it's a lot of money spent on a roster to get to the finish line of the Champions League, and nope, they're not going to get there this year. Man United 3, PSG 1 in the second leg. On aggregate, it was 3-3, and Manchester United 1 on away goals. Let's quickly continue. Ajax booted Real Madrid. We've talked about this. This happened on Tuesday, and Tottenham won 4-0 on aggregate versus Dortmund. Porto and Roma. Roma advances. And Roma fired their coach after that game. And Roma hired a new coach earlier this morning, Claudio Ranieri, former Leicester City manager, who won famously the Premier League with Leicester City 3 years ago, is now the manager at Roma. But Porto, moving on. Porto going to the quarterfinals of the Champions League. What is it, 2007? Did I miss the last 12 years?
Well, and Ajax, too. It's
like last year. Is it 1995?
Yeah, of course, this is a throwback. Porto, the last team outside of the big four leagues to have, I was going to say big five, but the French don't win the Champions League either, so you can just go big four in this particular case. Last team outside of that to win that, but that was a while ago now, and that was passionate when that a lot of passion in that second leg of the game there. Roma Porto was the tie that I kind of think was forgotten by a lot of people, but certainly watched the replay of it after the fact, and it was a lot of passion in the building, and they bring something to it. It's good to see different teams in this. I mean, that's the beauty of the Champions League. I think one of the things that made it so popular in the initial beginning was that you did get more variety than you do now, where it's pretty much the same grind. You know, Liverpool and Bayern will play next week and one will advance type thing, right? Like, I mean, nowadays teams like City and PSG have broken into the party in the last decade, but not all the way up. So it is going to be good to see a different team win, which of course means that Barcelona is going to win the Champions League. So there you go.
Of course. And that would not surprise me at all. Now let's move to the CONCACAF Champions League. There was 4 games.
Oh, hold on, Kevin, just to interject. MLS just got scored on again. I just wanted to put that in there. Live report.
Okay. All right. So the CONCACAF Champions League, the first leg of the quarterfinal, the second round in the knockout stage. There was 2 games on Tuesday, 2 games on Wednesday. Of course, we've talked about Santos Laguna beating New York Rebels and Tigres beating the Dynamo. Independiente 2, Sporting Kansas City 1. Maybe the Panamanian team is not that bad, and maybe they're actually good, which doesn't really say anything about Toronto, but maybe just Panama Independiente's Kai's team is actually not bad at all.
Yeah, it was funny. We interviewed, of course, the Panamanian expert in the lead-up to the TFC game, and he kept referring to the Kai, and I saw a whole bunch of Spanish people making fun of the broadcast, the CCL broadcast, going, oh, you only hear the English people saying that, and I had to interject and go, actually, the Panamanians, that's what they call it down there. But that aside, no, Oscar Brown, he got a shout-out on Extra Time Radio this week, so yep. Lots of people are noticing that. That's something that's that's part of the beauty of the competition is that in any competition like this, and the CCL is, you know, why I just spoke of the UEFA Champions League a moment ago, and how you still like to get to know these new teams. Well, the CCL still is in that stage where, like, who the hell is Kai, and they come in and Kai got this fast guy up top that can score goals and can finish, and you know that there's got to be someone in MLS that is going looking at him right now.
Oscar Brown, will he qualify as a temp player? Maybe we can get him for cheaper. Maybe he can just be part of the roster. If I was an MLS technical director, Oscar Brown is on my discovery list.
Well, look, you can't. People make the mistakes all the time in football, particularly in the past, of like overemphasizing tournaments. So they make a signing on a tournament reputation and then they bomb. We've seen that, you know, with the World Cup in the past. Some guy from usually an African or an Asian team steps up, has a great tournament, that can sign for big money, and then they never fit in. So you want to be careful. But yeah, I mean, the point being that athleticism will go a long way, and they play very well in that little box of a stadium down there on kind of weird turf. Apparently the TFC fans, their TFC players were saying that they weren't making excuses. They said this before, that it was weird turf to play on. So obviously they've taken full advantage of this home advantage. But I think Sporting's probably going to continue on there. They got the away goal. I think that's important. But Kai has certainly shown they belong. And good for them. And Panamanian soccer is very proud. You see that in their fan base. You see that in their national team, that they're very proud of what they do and think that they're underappreciated a lot. And that's fair. The other thing I'll say about this, and listening to the fallout when TFC lost up here, and a lot of that was panic over TFC's positioning right now. But in terms of like MLS-wide listening to the fallout, there was so much dismissal about how bad TFC played, how bad they played. And I go all the way back to the famous night in Trinidad and how bad the U.S. played and how all of these players should never see the game again. And my take on this, beyond, you know, trying to fight back against some of the one-game evaluation that takes place, is that we're disrespectful to the teams that win those games. I think a lot of American fans are disrespectful. MLS fans, I won't exclude Canadians in this, are disrespectful of teams like Kai in this particular situation. And they always assume it's because TFC played like crap, like Sporting played like crap, like the other teams, when they lose games like this, play bad. That's why they lose. No, they there's two teams involved. And I think you've got to tip your hat and say, well, if Kai can get it done in Kansas City, then good for them. And it'd be an amazing story to have them in the semifinals playing one of those big power Mexican teams. I am not Team MLS when it comes to this stuff. I watch these games mostly as a neutral, but
in a vacuum too. Like, I see these games in a vacuum. Sorry to interject. They're not part, like, I don't see like any community or brotherhood between MLS teams in the CONCACAF Champions League. It's every team for itself, anyways.
Yeah, and I find that's, you know, to go on that down that road for a while. You know, I've been watching the CCL way back to the CCC days, and back then, there was more of a, like, we've got to come together and prove that we can compete. And at this point in the evolution of the league, I think it's time that we stop doing that. I think most teams do, like most fan bases. I don't know, like, I don't think there's a lot of TFC fans cheering for the Montreal Impact when they went to the final.
The opposite. There was a lot of Club America fans coming out of Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, I know some that did. And I'm sure that you probably, you know, in Montreal, there were a few fans that were cheering for Toronto FC, but the vast majority were not, right? And I think that's normal, and that's healthy in a league like this. And having this, you know, you listen to Extra Time Radio, and I don't mean to bash them all the time, but they are what they are, and you know what they are, and they provide a good service of what they do, but they're not independent. And they try and play this narrative up of Team MLS, and I just don't know if that exists really anymore, or should it?
It exists in the content that's being produced, but it doesn't exist, I think, organically. in the real world outside of just a narrative that's being either pushed by people or people talk about it because they've seen it, but it's not like the hashtag MLS doesn't actually exist, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I mean, there are MLS fans out there that choose to cheer for other MLS teams, and you know what, that's okay too. Just like when the Stanley Cup playoffs happen, there's always this sort of narrative in this country, should you get behind the Jets or the Canadians or
Which Canadian team's going to go deep? Oh, it's been a drought. It's 1993. No Canadian team has won the Cup. Who cares?
I would argue that every team since 1993 has been Canadian at majority. Well,
majority
players,
of the players are. So, yeah, that's true. But enough about hockey.
But hockey. We should have a hockey podcast one day just to have one and call it a day. But sure. Anyway.
Well, we did one last spring.
Oh, yeah, the Caps, yeah.
Yeah, but you were not sober, I think, when we did it. So maybe that's your excuse. Last game Wednesday in the CCL, Monterrey at home versus Atlanta United. And the hashtag the Boer out made his appearance for the first time. Monterrey 3, Atlanta 0. Fans want a new coach already, I guess.
I'm sure they're in the minority.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
Sure they are.
It's what we call trolls that know that we're going to talk about it. And, well, I guess we're giving them credence. So we're talking
whenever
about
you
it.
Have, I've seen it in Toronto. Seattle fans have seen it. Whenever you boom and you have a lot of new fans coming in very quickly when a team launches, you're going to have a few of those new fans that are not as informed as older fans, we'll say.
Fair
and
weather.
This isn't gatekeeping. It's just saying that sometimes it's like shooting monkeys in a barrel. Which, why would you shoot a monkey in a barrel? Get out of the barrel. Help the monkey.
Why would you shoot a monkey? Like, a fish is fine.
It's fish,
no one cares
about a fish. Monkeys in a barrel. Am I mixing my metaphors up again? I mean, that's on the bingo card, too. Dwayne mixes the metaphors up.
Yeah, it's shooting a fish in a barrel.
Murdering monkeys in barrels. Jesus, this got dark.
I just want to make sure that people are aware. No monkeys were hurt in the recording of this show.
It's Friday, so apologies. Look, it's an easy target. But the thing is, Atlanta has a lot of fans, and when you have a very large fan base, some of those fans are going to be smart. Most of the fans are going to just be kind of in the middle, and some of the fans are going to be dumb. And if you're calling for your coach to be fired after four games. Yeah. You're on that latter side. I mean, although that said, there's a study out there that shows that if you're going to fire a coach, it's better to do it like 10 games in than to wait because they – and I forget exactly the methodology of it, but it sort of justifies quick firings. It says that the worst time to fire a coach is after like a year. You either get rid of them right away because, oh, this clearly isn't working out, or you hold on to them for a long time.
Hashtag,
no in-betweens.
Hashtag Mike Petke. That's a type of firing that actually works. Before we move on to look at week two, before we talk about the U.S. Women's National Team versus the USSF, I just want to make a bit of a, not a denial, and not a confirmation either, but as you saw on MLSsoccer.com and a lot of other places, it was reported by Arcadio Marcuzzi from 98.5 FM earlier this week that Rémi Garde could be on his way out. Those are clickbait headlines, of course. The real thing is Lyon's not happy with their manager right now. And the president of the team is a big mouth. He talks a lot. He talks a lot to everyone, talks in the hallways, and talks to journalists. And he mentioned in conversation and hallways and other places, according to Marcuzzi, that he wouldn't be opposed to bringing Rémi Garde back. But that's about the extent of it. There's no inquiry that were made by Lyon towards Montreal. There's no tampering that happened there. Here's the contractual stance of Rémi Garde right now. His contract is throughout this year, and there's an option year next year that can be picked up by the club. If it is picked up by the club, there's an exponential salary raise, according to Marcuzzi again, for Rémi Garde next year. Do the Impact want to continue to invest? Right now, his salary is about $1.5 to $2 million a year, which makes sense. We heard about $5 million investment for Rémi Garde when he was signed a year and a half ago for 2 years. So that would make a lot of sense. But the third year of his contract would be an option year. So could Rémi Garde not, could the Impact not make, not kick in his option and he would be free to leave, and then Lyon would get him back. He was one of the good coaches in the recent history of Lyon. He won a Coupe de la Ligue and had some great seasons with them, but there's nothing there. It's not even smoke. At this point, there's not even an amber. It's just conversations that happened, and his name was brought up, not like an official conversation, not in wanting to get him, but more of, oh yeah, if it continues like this, this could happen. If it continues like this, this could happen. I don't want to discredit Arcadio Marcuzzi's report, but if you read between the line of the report, you would understand and you would realize that I wouldn't even call it a rumor at this point. I would just say that it's a possibility if it doesn't resign its contract. And the way it is formulated, it's pretty much what it is.
It's speculation on speculation. I think if you – obviously his connection with that club, you know, the lure of playing in the Champions League in Europe would be, you know, significant for any coach. But you don't make a choice to uproot your life and come to North America and manage an MLS in a foreign country, you know, someplace that probably was way outside what he imagined himself at in 10 years ago, unless you're committed to a project, right? And it seems that unlikely that unless there was some offer that the Impact could not compete with on the table, that he wouldn't necessarily be going down that route. So yeah, it's speculation on speculation, and certainly it would be an impactful thing to happen to the Impact. Forgive me if it were, but it's not happening yet. So we'll just move on. We'll keep an eye on it like we keep an eye on everything, but I'm not going to give it too much more stock than that.
No, to be quite fair, I don't think it will happen. And if Rémi Garde is leaving Montreal in the season, which could happen, who knows? We never know what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. But if he does leave for the Impact, I highly doubt that he would go back to Lyon, right? It's a case of been there, done that, and Rémi Garde always talks often of life experiences and growing and learning. So going back to your old stomping ground, I don't think would qualify in his description of continuing to learn and grow in your football career. So we'll see, but I don't think it's going to happen.
You know, just quickly, I mean, we used to talk about this with Javinko too back in the day, is that there's a certain lifestyle choice that these guys made too. They're making damn good money in a city where they have just the right amount of fame, right? They don't get bothered when they go out for dinner. Montreal's a beautiful place. Why wouldn't you want to be a millionaire in Montreal and not be harassed? Whereas going back to Lyon, you know, you're going to be pressure on you right away. And it's not to say there isn't pressure in Montreal, but, you know, there's a difference, right? And
it's a different type of pressure. Here, if you get recognized at the supermarket, worst case scenario, someone's going to come and talk to you and shake your hand and be like, oh, continue. They're not going to be criticized. In Lyon, if you're having a 4-game losing streak and you're going to the market to get your vegetables, guess what? The Gond, the fan, who Gond is a supporters group of Lyon, the guy who makes his supermarket, his groceries, next to you, he's going to throw a tomato at you if you lose 4 games in a row. Like, it's a different world.
Yeah. It'd be the difference between, you know, does Lyon have a hockey team? If they do, it would be the difference between being the coach of the Lyon hockey team versus the Montreal Canadiens, right? Like, that's your difference.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. But we do not put any weight behind that rumor for now, and I doubt that we will. It'll be forgotten soon enough, in my opinion. Now, before we look at week 2 and the matchup, Dwayne, today, a lawsuit that existed in the past got transformed and put into a gender discrimination lawsuit earlier today. The U.S. women's national team is suing the USSF for gender discrimination.
Yeah, it was a class action suit that was filed in California just before the show went on. So we've had a chance to sort of review the New York Times article that's out there on it. Not a lot of new information in terms of what the complaints are. They feel that there's been consistent discrimination in terms of compensation and other factors, things like training opportunities, per diems, like playing on turf, that still comes up, and I'm not going to talk about turf today. We all know our position that, you know, show me the science before you tell me that it's inferior, because anyway. But there's a lot of those complaints that are out there, and they have taken this to a next step. The U.S. women's are very, very savvy in terms of how they do things when it comes to stuff like this, and I'm not saying that this is right or wrong, but they certainly timed the announcement on an interesting day. It is International Women's Day. It is a World Cup year. They are in the news cycle right now because they just came off the She Believes Cup, where they did not succeed in. But the England won that, in case you don't know. We didn't really talk about it. We did talk about the Algarve. But, yeah, it's they're trying to drive their point home. And they have made a lot of advancements in the past few years. Do we want the women to be treated equally? 100%.
Yes.
Is it as simple as going, this line has to match this line in terms of a budget?
I wish it was, but it's not.
Yeah, because the women are compensated. For those that don't know, a real quick Cole's notes at this, or TLDR, or whatever you want to call it, summary. The women are paid on a salary, basically, and they're guaranteed. If they're in the pool, they're guaranteed to get paid a certain amount, regardless of whether they get called up or not. They're also, what complicates the women's compensation a little bit too, is how much backing the USSF puts into the NWSL and their salaries and their allocated salaries in there. You know, some people think that they should be factored in to how they're being compensated. The men are paid purely on a bonus structure because they have professional contracts. They are, you know, they make millions of dollars in some cases elsewhere, right? So they don't really need a salary from the USSF, but they can do quite well if they are successful. I haven't looked at it in a while, but I believe, you know, they get something like $15,000 if they win a game, right? And they're in the lineup. So it can be, you know, in a World Cup year when the U.S. makes it, which, you know, we have to go back 4 or 5 years now. But when they do, those men can make upwards to a couple hundred thousand dollars playing for the national team.
Usually, as if you win the World Cup, you made about $1 million, a bit more, in that tournament as a player.
The other really complicating factor about this is the fact that a lot of their complaint has to do with bonuses, tournament bonuses, which are controlled by the USSF. So that's the USSF's argument, is like, we get the pool from FIFA, we take it up with them, basically. It's not our fault, which is why this thing isn't getting resolved quickly. If it was simply like, you know, if the men were on salary and the women were on salary and the women were getting paid 30% less, I think it'd be black and white. It is just not black and white. But, you know, to reiterate this again, we absolutely think that they should be compensated equally. It's just a matter of how you calculate that, and that's why this is complicated. But look, the women, you know, famously did not want to play on turf in 2015. They fought that. They didn't succeed in getting the World Cup moved off of it, but they did succeed in stopping themselves from playing on turf in U.S. games, unless the only way that the U.S. women's national team will ever play on turf again is if, you know, in a generational changes and the turf technology improves to the point that they don't mind, or they're, you know, in a tournament that's on turf again that they have no control over. The U.S. will not do that anymore. That's an advancement in their mind that they have made. So they have been successful at this sort of stuff, and I'm sure that this class action suit, like any suit like this, is partly a negotiation tactic and partly a desire to see it out. I think the women would rather have the USSF just go, okay, you know what? What do you need? And negotiate a change that they're half satisfied with, then take it to court, particularly in a World Cup year. But I think the other thing too, and I'm very careful in how I say this, is the U.S. women tend to play better when they have a chip on their shoulder, because they don't have a lot of external rivals in the world. Like, they're not challenged that often. So I think almost having this us against the world stuff helped them in 2015 when they were fighting the turf, and it propelled them to win the World Cup. And this might, you know, people that think this is a distraction, they might end up being beneficial to them, because this is another fight. It's them. They're in their little, their world, and they have their allies that are spurring them on, and they step up. They have proven time and time again that when they're angry about something, they play well. And I think maybe I'm not suggesting at all that that's their motivation behind this, but I'm suggesting that it might be an benefit of it, is it might give them something to fight for.
It's like a rallying point. It's like something to converge to and to gather and to create a unity out of. Like, sometimes it works. It's you make a unit out of people. You make a team out of people. And sometimes controversy or what can be perceived as a battle altogether going into battle will form bonds and we'll make a better team out of it. True. That's true. But we'll see the resolution. We'll see when I agree with what you were saying, Wayne, that we want the treatment and the equality to be observed, but it's sometimes a bit more complicated. We're not saying that they're not treated equally. They probably are treated inequally, but it's just to prove it and to be able to. So it's, So we'll keep an eye on that lawsuit in the future for sure. Yeah.
Real quickly, I know there's a lot of Canadian listeners out there, and people will ask how the American treatment, American equality stuff relates to Canada. And unfortunately, we don't ever get to see budgets in this country, which is a bugaboo of mine. I'm not sure why a publicly funded institution shouldn't be releasing their numbers, but that's a different debate. However, I did several years ago have someone leak me a summary document of the CSA's budget, and I can only tell you what I saw then and what they explained to me. And what I saw then was that there was about a 5% discrepancy towards in favor of the women in that particular year, and it was explained to me that that in terms of total budget, and it was just a single line, is this how much money went to the women, this is how much money went to the men, and how that was distributed within that was different. The women had more of that budget go towards things like clinics and residency and tournaments and games and things like that, whereas the men, it was more pure compensation. So there was a difference in terms of the women's pocketbook for sure, but in terms of the overall funding, it was equal and in fact slightly above, because the women at that particular point were entering a qualifying year of their campaign, the men were not. So that's, I believe it was 2014 or 2013 I saw that document. So it's been a while, but that's about all I can summarize in terms of what I know about how the women are funded. And if anyone from the CSA is listening, by all means, show us your books, because I think we deserve to see them in this open society right now.
Yep. We could always try the famous law for, what's it called? The law to...
Oh, the access for information, yeah.
Yes.
You're going to have to give us some Patreon for that. It would be an expensive undertaking.
Yeah, no, exactly. We should ask Mike Turner or Prof Bank, like, hey, guys, how about we try to access information about the CSA? Anyways, before we wrap the show for this week, we'll finish with the weekly segment where we look at the MLS games upcoming this weekend. And if you take a look at your screens right now, you can see the lineup for the games this weekend. It starts tomorrow, Saturday. Jeez, it's Friday. I need to go to sleep. 1 p.m. Saturday, Chicago, Orlando, New England, Columbus at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, FC Dallas, LA Galaxy, 3:30 p.m., and then it goes to 5 p.m. Houston Dynamo versus the Montreal Impact. That should actually be a really interesting game. Real Salt Lake, Vancouver at 6 p.m., San Jose, Minnesota at 8, and then we continue, Dwayne, with a couple more games. Seattle, Colorado, Saturday night, then four games on Sunday. TFC has a bye week. NYCFC, DC United, Kansas City, Philly, Atlanta, FC Cincinnati, who, by the way, FC Cincinnati has waived and released Blake Smith, the defender from a Montreal Impact draft pick and player, and they have loaned Emery Welshman, the Canadian who was playing for FC Cincinnati, for the entire season to Forge FC. But Atlanta's playing FC Cincinnati Sunday at 5 p.m., and LAFC versus Portland Sunday, 7:30 p.m. Dwayne, of all the games, which ones really get you excited this weekend?
To watch the Impact again, I think Houston's an interesting team too, coming off of their CCL adventures, though you have to think that the Impact should be favored in that game as well, and that would be a tremendous start for them if they could have 6 points after two games. I am curious to watch Cincinnati play because in Atlanta as well, so that one I'll be definitely tuning into because I think that could be just entertaining on many levels. If Atlanta were to lose that game, the panic attack that they would have on Twitter would be epic. It would be a meltdown for the ages. But I think what's more likely is that we're going to continue to see a struggling Cincinnati team try and figure itself out even more. And you saw them make changes this week. Welshman, I think that move was more born out of the international spot position, but it also, I think, reflects making two moves like
to Sani Kaif for empty U.S. international, who was signed by Cincinnati, needed a roster spot, and I guess it's his spot that he took. So,
yeah, and this is a reflection, I think, too, of them learning how to evaluate the talent. And unfortunately for guys like Welshman, they count as internationals down there, and we've beaten this dead horse back to life and dead again over the years. It's almost pointless at this point to even talk about the stupidity of it. We don't believe it's based on a legal argument. I think that's an excuse that they're making. They just don't want to deal with USSF backlash for it, is why MLS continues to hold on. But until that time, those Canadians are going to be at a disadvantage down there. But it's interesting, that move on the front, that Cincinnati, it was one thing to see Toronto lend a player to York Nines right in their backyard, But to see a team in the United States,
yeah,
albeit with a guy with Canadian connections as their head coach, but a team in the United States willing to work with the Canadian Premier League, that's really important too, because I think that will make them more open to signing Canadians and then loaning them back to the CPL to see how they develop. It's a smart move from an MLS perspective. You're not keeping them in an international spot. They're very little money on your books, really. And you see that if they don't work out, you just sell them back to the Canadian Premier League or let them go on a free at the end.
Yeah, it does make sense. And we'll keep an eye on those games this weekend. And to finish the week, Dwayne, by the way, if you're not part of our fantasy, join our fantasy league. You can find the link on sportspodcastingnetwork.com, on our Twitter feeds, or just look for Soccer Today on SPN in fantasy in MLSsoccer.com, and you'll find our league. Dwayne, my captain for this weekend is Nicholas Lodero. Dwayne, I'm really high on Seattle. They're playing Colorado. So I'm high on Seattle. I'm high on Atlanta, even though they had three losses so far in the last couple of weeks and big losses in the CCL. I still feel that Atlanta is going to have a coming out party against Cincinnati. Like Martinez, the two Martinez, so Pitti and Yosef will have a party. And I do have a Piatti again, but my captain is Lodero, because I do believe Seattle will put on a clinic at home versus the Rapids. This is my team in a nutshell. Basically, Lodero, Martinez with an S, both of them, Rui Diaz and Piatti is the core of my team for this weekend.
Yeah, I just loaded in when you were talking about this to make sure I'd actually switch players out, and miracles, I have. Although Piatti's still my captain, so I'm
it's not
curious.
A bad choice. It's not a bad choice. Like, he's playing Houston. Houston did show some great things against Costa Toya, but they did as well not look that great at some point, and they're going to be tired. So I think Piatti's not a bad choice for your captain.
All right, yeah, Martinez I also have in my lineup, though. So, you know, yeah, as you mentioned, Cincinnati, that might be interesting. Although, we'll see. Pitti Martinez, actually, he was called up by the Argentina national team. So that's, I'm sure, going to get a lot of play today in MLS circles. So there's some more Atlanta news for you. It's turning into the Atlanta podcast today, the Atlanta Review with Dwayne and Kevin.
Exactly. As always.
Y'all.
Yeah, y'all. All right, y'all. How y'all doing? It's Kevin and Dwayne from Atlanta. Atlanta, Georgia. Mm-hmm. Atlanta. Woo! For some reason, whenever I think of Atlanta, I think of Ric Flair. So.
Right, there you go.
All right. Dwayne can be followed on Twitter at 24th Minute. Myself at Kev Laramie. We'll be back Monday with a review of the weekend, the Canadian Review, and more of the world of football with a soccer perspective. But as always, until next time, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.